This week's episode is brought to you by Blue Harvest Vintage. Are you a collector? Blue Harvest love to help you find that missing piece you need to complete your collection. They have extensive stock of vintage Star Wars vehicles and mint on card action figures, as well as new The Force Awakens and Black Series items. Blue Harvest have Funko Pops, Lego, Dinky, Corgi, Matchbox and more. Everything a collector could possibly need. If they don't stock it, then let them know, and their knowledgeable staff will be only too pleased to help. Head to Morley Market in Leeds to see the life-size Darth Vader. Alternatively, reach out to Blue Harvest on Twitter, at Blue Harvest UK, Facebook, Blue Harvest Vintage Collectibles, a website, blueharvestvintage.co.uk, or email at blueharvesttoys@gmail.com.
Talk Star Wars is a proud member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Follow at SW Commonwealth on Twitter and take your first steps into a larger world.
This is Talk Star Wars,
the official podcast at talkstarwars.co.uk.
Welcome back to Talk Star Wars, our special pre-release Rogue One episode. I'm Mark.
I'm excited. And Stephen.
I'm Rob.
I'm Paul.
Hello, everyone.
And coughing.
very dignified intro there, Paul. I like that.
Sorry, guys. And still got man flu, but there you go. We soldier on.
Yeah, Paul will most likely be riding that mute button this evening.
Yeah, that's just for self-gratification purposes, though, really.
We are almost dead, except Rob, who's still got antibodies. The rest of us are
just about.
Yeah, all of us are actually quite under the weather, aren't we?
I've been through mine and out the other side, really. I think I'm just clearing out now.
Yeah, well, Lisa's sick as a pig here this week.
Sorry, Steve?
You're a whippersnapper. You're full of testosterone and antibodies aplenty.
This is where people tell we haven't met.
Yeah, we are your future.
Yeah.
It ain't pretty.
Arthritis be damned.
Right. Okay, let's get into this then. A quick announcement section, and then we can get into some exciting stuff for this week. Oh, this week there will be no After Dark Side. There will be a part one of this podcast and a part two of this podcast. And part two will come out on Wednesday, right before the first of us lucky people get to see the movie. So look out for that.
So if we're going to curse, where do we do it?
We don't.
Ow.
Stephen.
Yeah, Rob. Why am I getting a Stephen?
You might want to tell Jen
that's your
as well.
Name, you feel it.
Yeah, judging, my wife's more likely to.
Judging on what's been said so far, it might be a good idea to give her a warning.
Rob's right. Been a bit of potty mouth lately as well.
Oh, I'm obscene.
I only mentioned the small thermal exhaust port right below the main port last week.
Yes, he did, and that went down very well. Everybody thought it was jolly lovely.
All right, a quick reminder that our sponsors, Blue Harvest Vintage, are offering a 10% discount on orders when you tell them that we sent you, which is considerable when you consider the fine items that they're dealing. Also, I've got a special request from them this week. They've asked if I can just ask the listeners if there's any chance anyone has a full vintage action figure collection. That's 96 of the original action figures, because they want to take some photographs for the store. So if anyone's got the full 96 and you're willing to lend them out or escort them, I would imagine, to a photo session, just either drop us a line or get in touch with them at facebook.com/ Blue Harvest Vintage Collectibles or on Twitter at Blue Harvest UK. That's something interesting to be.
Is that like 96? Involved in. Is that the first trilogy?
That's the first. I'm assuming that's the full vintage.
Yeah,
the full waves of the vintage collection.
They can borrow mine, but they'll have to come out of their boxes, unfortunately.
Paul, I want to marry you.
Uh-oh. Paul, you can buy a small nation with that sort of collection.
Yeah. Well, hasn't Jeremy got all night?
I don't know. I think I might throw this over to Jeremy because I think he knows some people.
He
definitely knows one guy that has.
He meets him in dark alleys and goes, "You want to buy a gonk?"
Top men.
A gonk droid. All right. Continuing now, before we derail this so soon into the episode, continuing the announcement section.
Yeah,
so,
what do you mean?
Robert Phillips, who joined our little community last week, became a TSW sponsor this week. And so, by extension, became a VIP. And he actually jumped in and started donating at the highest level. So thank you for that, Robert. It's extremely generous of you.
Yeah, thank you.
And he also completed the set this week by leaving us a 5-star review, which we're going to get to in a minute. So Robert's done absolutely everything.
Wow.
On Steve, your camera.
Everything I want to be.
Steve, you've popped your camera on.
Clothed.
Please don't do anything.
Oh, my word.
Oh, no, hang on. Have I turned the camera on?
You turned the camera on. Yeah.
Sorry, that was an accident. I meant to mute while I coughed.
You might want to keep an eye on that tonight, Steve. Naked Steve. Okay, Robert, thank you very much for being so such a completist and being so generous with your donations. Thank you very much. Oh, yeah, I need to just mention he's also got himself a Jedi name already. He will henceforth be known as Roby One Kenobi.
Oh, will he now? I see. I wonder
have Jedi names?
No, we don't have Jedi names. No one's given us Jedi names. That should be a
hang on a
project.
Minute. This Rob guy comes in here, gets first place, takes over.
Hey,
naked next.
I'm letting you go. Oh, him.
Yeah,
not you.
This could get confusing. he's not the only new VIP this week. Our dear friend and long-time listener, Dave Landonovan. Also became a Talk Star Wars VIP this week, and so did Jean-Paul Sinclair, who's been a long-time Facebook supporter. So thank you guys for jumping on board and making this thing work for us. It's going a long way to us achieving our long-term goals for Talk Star Wars, so it's great.
What, breaking even?
Breaking even, yeah.
That's a short-term goal.
That's a short-term
long-term goals to be able to afford a round.
Within the next 7 to 10 years, we will break even. All right. I mentioned just a second ago about Robert's review. So don't forget, you can take advantage of our Ron Burgundy policy, which means that whatever you write in a 5-star review, we will read it verbatim on the podcast, as long as it's clean. So if you want to promote your podcast or blog, that's where to do it. This is what Robert wrote for us this week, if I can read that tiny print. Impressive, most impressive 5-star review. Great podcast, hosts love a tangent, as you may have already heard, and I love following them on it. It shows how much they love the lore. They respect and welcome all and any theories, even when Steve is wrong. Han needed to, this is a parenthetical comment, Han needed to die, even though he was the only rebel I really like. The guys are very down to earth. It's a friendly feeling show. I listen to them whilst commuting to work, and it really has made me look forward to the drive. Keep up the great show, guys. Glad I discovered it. Thumbs up. Prepare for questions. May your victories break your chains and the Force keep you free. Rob Phillips, and he's named himself Roby One Kenobi, but considering what he's done for us in the past couple of weeks, he can name himself. So
yeah, have some of that, Nathan.
Robert, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Yeah, I don't mind having more Kenobis on the show.
No,
more
Kenobis
in the community. It's all good.
Kenobis in the community. There's a charity drive I can get behind.
Excellent stuff. All right. Well, thank you very much for that, everybody, this week. It's been a really banner week for Talk Star Wars. let's jump into listener comms. So you can send us your questions and comments via Twitter, Facebook, and email. You can send an email to talkstarwarsinfo@gmail.com. And then you can send us voicemail quickly and easily via email, or you can iMessage us on that email address. Would someone like to take James at Tumbling Sabre's question?
Can I do it?
Go for it, mate.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. It's from James at Tumbling Sabre. In light of all this new Kyber crystal information, I find myself asking questions. I'm concerned that kyber crystals will become something like midichlorian. Oh, I said it. Sorry. Something like M words combined with a mood ring. That sounds fun. why was Count Dooku's lightsaber red? Presumably he did not have to corrupt or break the crystals. The crystals will, as it was always his. It went red because he was feeling Sithy. Feels quite mood ring to me. Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, so what do we make of that then? We've spoken a lot recently, haven't we, about kyber crystals.
Mm-hmm.
And then what do we think of this? Because we know that a Sith Lord needs to bleed a crystal to turn it red. Yep. They need to break its will, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But these seem to be kind of hijacked crystals Is there any chance, do you think, that Dooku may have found a crystal similar to, say, Jin's, that we see Jin in Rogue One? She wears a crystal around her neck, right? The clear crystal. Mm-hmm. Is there a chance that he's got himself a new crystal for his Sith saber and he's turned that, especially for his Darth Tyrannus persona?
I could almost imagine him commissioning someone to get his crystal for him, to be honest.
Yeah, well,
kind of. He is quite, like a delegate, doesn't he?
Yeah, I'd say.
I go back a step to before the Count Dooku bit about the M word. I think the difference is that kyber crystals, to me, seem to feel like they have a spirit in them, whereas M-words feel like bacteria.
Okay.
And scientific.
Yeah.
Does that kind of make sense?
It absolutely makes sense, yeah. They're definitely the...
Hang on, can I have that in writing, please?
I can do that. I can do something for you there. It is, like you are so often doing, Steve, backing into a really important point. It is... The difference is that midichlorians were George trying to science, sort of ground his mythology in a science fiction, in a modern science fiction.
Yeah, he tried to science the Force, basically.
He tried to science it. And this looks like the story group's attempt now to sort of change the nature of the kyber crystal to give us a more spiritual element, something that bridges the Force and the user, and that's what the crystal is.
Mm.
So you're right. You're absolutely right, Steve. They're much more spiritual.
What's more interesting is the origin of the crystals.
Mm. Or where they are and how they're achieved and how they're
retrieved. How, and that's actually much more intriguing than anything else.
Do they trap spirits or something? Or you don't know. The world is their oyster. They've opened up a whole. I know it's canon, but they've opened up a whole new part of the story to the audience. They can fill in on now, can't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And they've started to do it in the Clone Wars TV series, where you see the children, the young Padawans, go out on their trials to capture, if you like, their crystals and bring them back. And the crystals sing to them. When they're near a crystal, it sort of calls to them, which we saw with Rey. She's the most recent example of this. The Skywalker crystal, the crystal in the Skywalker lightsaber called to Rey, and that's what triggered the vision and all that sort of stuff. So with Dooku, it does make you wonder, like Paul, you're probably right, he's probably commissioned this or bought a crystal rather than have to go on a trial.
He didn't even really care much about the Sith, did he? Let's be honest.
Yeah, that is the thing.
He's very much his own sort of, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Not enigma, but he's his own sort of element within, between light and dark, wasn't he?
Yeah, and we spoke about this when we discussed his eyes.
On the darker side of things, but
yeah, he was a very traditional Sith where he had an agenda of his own, and he aligned himself with the Sith temporarily to try and achieve those goals, right?
Yeah, very much like what was it? That guy in Lord of the Rings who he also played.
Oh yeah, yeah,
Saruman.
Yeah.
Similar kind of situation, actually.
So, with that in mind, then, what are the odds, what are the chances of Dooku deliberately converting or corrupting, bleeding this crystal into red so that he's seen to have all the adornments that are associated with the Sith? Like he's not necessarily that guy, and somewhere there's a blue or green lightsaber that belonged to him when he was a Jedi, but he's got a crystal and he's broken the crystal deliberately just to look like a Sith with the red
blade. Does it still project some element of power is the question, really, I suppose.
What, him having the red saber?
Yeah,
as opposed
beyond...
To
him? Yeah, there's a certain sinister situation going on there, then, isn't there? So, I don't know.
I would imagine there's no way the Emperor or Palpatine would sit by and let one of his apprentices have a lightsaber that wasn't red. Rob, are you still with us?
Yeah.
All right.
I was just waiting.
You're uncharacteristically quiet.
I didn't want to interrupt. I'm trying to be, you know, good.
Throw in, dude. Let's get your take on this.
Yeah, throw up.
Yeah, I kind of swing with you guys, to be honest. Part of the reason I didn't jump in is because I'm sort of, you know, wanted to make sure I fully understood what you were getting at and how much I agreed with it. I think disguise and blending in and keeping up appearances is a large part of it. It could easily as well just be an oversight.
Yeah, you can't rule that stuff out. I don't think that it would be an oversight. And what we're doing really is we're filling in these cracks. That's what we do, isn't it? When fans talk about this stuff, they're just pasting in the cracks that haven't been, these things haven't been discussed on screen.
Exactly. Yeah.
But there's one line in James's question, which is presumably did not have to corrupt or break the crystal as it was always his. I don't think this would be his original crystal.
Doesn't have to. Yeah, I think it'd probably be easier for him to use somebody else's for that, for those ends. Yeah.
Yeah.
How do they actually break the will of the crystal? Like literally sit in front of it and have a
work
conversation with it.
Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah, kind of.
They not kind in as many of words, but they allude to it in the Ahsoka book, but they don't really break down the process in that. It's kind of like the Sith that she encounters, or the not necessarily a Sith, he's probably more of an Inquisitor, but the character that she encounters in the book seemed to have hijacked that crystal from a Jedi. Like whoever he killed, he took the crystal and then he had to force it out of their control, you know, like breaking its will, breaking its bonds with its former owner, and that's what turned it red.
Is it fair to say then that crystals are like, they have the Force and they are good and bad as well?
Ah, now, here's a question then. If the crystal is yours and it already obeys your will, can you change the colour freely?
Well, this is something that it would appear that Lucasfilm have flirted with previously, with their designs for Revenge of the Sith may have seen Anakin's blade turn when he did.
Right.
They never followed through on that. And there's some, we've mentioned it before, the Eric Tiemann's art, which shows a dual-bladed lightsaber, one blade red, one blade blue. So it's sort of kind of intimating that that might be a thing. As you turn, you can change, like your crystal will follow you loyally to the dark side. And maybe that's what's happened here.
Maybe.
With Dooku.
Well, or maybe it's just kind of an under, you know, if there's a sort of a symbiotic relationship between Jedi, you know, Force user and crystal, maybe it's just a kind of understanding that's never spoken. That's just kind of trails.
So with that in mind, Kylo couldn't really ever have Anakin's lightsaber anyway, because it wouldn't work. It would work literally.
He'd have to try and bend it to his will.
He wouldn't be as one with it, would he?
No.
Yeah, I mean, that's another, the whole Kylo with the Skywalker lightsaber is a whole other conversation, I think. And we could start down that path now.
Our path.
But
forever with it.
It's a great question. James, that's probably one of the most intuitive and open-ended questions ever.
Yeah, with the Kylo having Luke's blade, like Anakin's original blade, I would suggest that was probably to put it on a little plinth in his room alongside that helmet and whatever else. Thanks. Whatever else he's collected. So it was less about him using Anakin's lightsaber and more about him possessing it, I think, that thing in The Force Awakens.
Yeah. Very good.
No, I think with this Dooku thing, I think they've taken a step down the path now of breaking the crystal's will. So I would think it would be less likely, to my mind, that just because you change your allegiance, the crystal wouldn't necessarily follow you.
I would love to see it in Rogue One, in the mines, and someone explaining this and getting it hammered home. You know, it'd be fantastic, wouldn't it, to know this, you know, not in a scientific way, but in that kind of, you know, it's real, all of it way.
Yeah. I think we might learn more of it when there's a Jedi to tell us the story, possibly next year with Luke and Rey.
Later on, Mark, because I've obviously read the show notes fully, I know the answer to this. Are you mentioning the Italian interview with Gareth Edwards?
It was a French one, right?
Oui.
Yes. Yeah, that is in the show notes. That'll be in part two.
Okay. I knew that. I just wanted to allude to it.
Okay. Thanks, mate. Foreshadowing. It's awesome. let's put this to bed then. Let's do a quick roundtable. Did Dooku have to break his own crystal, or is his red blade a new crystal? I'm going to go with it's a new crystal. Paul?
Always was the way it was, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
He's crafted it that way. Yeah.
So a new crystal rather than his Jedi crystal. Okay.
Yes. Rob? Yes.
Never. I'm going to go with the idea that that he didn't have to do anything to it because it just kind of followed his.
It followed his.
He did. I'm kind of of the feeling that they don't have to corrupt it if it's theirs. Okay. But if it calls to them, it's kind of bonded to them in some weird forcey way.
Cool. And Steve?
Yeah, I don't think he changed it. If he was going to change anything, it'd be his name because it sounds like poodoo.
Okay, then. That's all good stuff. Right, James, hopefully you got something out of that. It's one of those things that we might have to spend some more time on later on post-Rogue One, I think, when we understand these Kyber crystals a little bit better.
Yeah, thanks for using up half the show.
Yeah. Okay, let's jump over to Kyle at Tumbling Saber. He sent us a voicemail this week.
Boys, it's Kyle at Tumbling Saber. Hope you guys are doing well and super stoked for Rogue One, just like the rest of us. And after you guys really, really did a killer job with my Dooku question last week, I came to a stark realization that there are no stupid questions, only stupid people. So I guess Mr. Garrison was right all along. So this week I'm thinking about monsters in Star Wars. All throughout the saga, from Wampas and Rancors to arena beasts, undersea creatures, and now Rathtars, monsters have been a part of every movie. But I'm wondering if we're going to get that continuation in Rogue One. From what we've seen so far, I would say the answer is no, but I've been wrong before, unfortunately, and I hate to say it, but I think I might be wrong again. So I had this little harebrained theory that rebels and stormtroopers duking it out on the beaches of Scarif in the shallows when a tentacle would reach out. And we'd finally see the reintroduction of the most classic of all Star Wars monsters, the Dianoga. So imagine Dianoga's pissed off at a bunch of troops for invading their world and fighting on their beaches. How dare they? Thrashing out all these soldiers, tossing them about. That'd be pretty cool, right? We finally get to see this Star Wars monster that we've loved for 40 years. But I don't know. Do you think that would be appropriate for this movie? Or is that a departure from the theme, the tone that they're going for? I thought it'd be a neat way to explain where the Dianoga come from. I know they have this homeworld on Wikipedia of starts with a V. I can't remember anymore. I don't know. What do you think? Do you think that would be a little nod to the originals that here's how that stupid Dianoga got into the trash bin? Anyway, that's it. I will hang up and listen. Look forward to your answer. And as always, long live the Star Wars Commonwealth.
Awesome. So did the Dianoga start out on Scarif and make its way to into the Death Star? What do we think? I think that's an awesome idea.
Pardon me, boy. What's the Dianoga?
Oh, goodness me.
Paul, educate Stephen.
Trash compactor.
Oh, yes. Right. Thank you.
That took a long time.
So that had to get onto the Death Star somehow, right?
Yeah, I'll tell you why it's there. I think the Dianogas might have a little bit more backstory than we think, and I think it was one of the prisoners in that block, and I think it was shoved in the bin.
All right, okay. That's interesting. I thought it was there to break stuff down.
No, but what's the point of breaking it down when you're crashing it anyway?
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, that's very true.
I don't think there'll be any monsters because the film is supposed to have more gritty
Can I interject? I see a featurette the other day saying that the monsters of Rogue One or something. I haven't actually watched it.
The creatures,
sure
yeah. Yeah, there was.
Was it the creatures?
Well, okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm not doing spoilers, so I'm missing all this stuff.
Oh, well, Rogue One, they build this Death Star, and it gets blown up eventually, right?
What? That would never happen in real life.
It gets hit by a large boat.
Isn't there 10 minutes of footage now out there? There was a thing on IGN, you could watch 10 minutes of the film.
Maybe if you edit all the trailers and TV spots together, I find it hard to believe they'd get 10 minutes out of it.
Well, that's what's on IGN. I shall try and grab it while we're talking very intelligently, and it will look like I've never left.
You've got 3 seconds.
What?
Rob, what do you think of this Dianoga thing? Do you think there's a chance that we might see it in the waters of Scarif, sort of attacking stormtroopers?
I really like that idea, actually, especially if it kind of starts off, you know, a little bit sort of not normal looking, because obviously that there's only so much you can do with that. But I like the idea that even the brief period it spends in the trash compactor is enough to sort of warp it slightly.
Yeah, yeah.
I also love the idea that it's a freshwater creature. I think that's hilarious. Like a saltwater Dianogas.
Yeah.
Dianogas. I like the idea there are saltwater ones, freshwater ones, all that sort of stuff.
I love the idea of pulling a wrapping that one of those tentacles around a stormtrooper and pulling it under, and then that would reframe chronologically the attack in the compactor, the trash compactor, would reframe it as a callback, wouldn't it?
To Rogue One. Maybe they'll actually show you how it got into the compactor. That would be even better.
I don't think this film's going to slow down enough to show us any of this stuff, but it's a really cool idea.
Yeah, it would be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it would be good to see monsters, but I hadn't got that vibe from all the trailers, but I've stopped watching them.
The creatures I've seen so far look very sentient to me, like soldiers and bounty hunters. They don't.
Yeah,
I haven't seen much to sort of suggest that there are any lurkers, like the Dianoga or the Wampa or anything like that.
Hmm.
Great question, though, Carl. Thank you very much for that. It's a great, great idea, and I would love to see it, but I'm not sure that the film will slow down enough to do that.
Just found a little something. Chances are the Dianoga got into the trash compactor purely as initially a spawn, not much else, and it just grew in there.
Oh, right.
It was just crap, obviously, that was in there, and it might have just literally spawned in there and grew and grew and grew.
Well, I guess if it's an ocean-dwelling creature, it could lay millions of eggs, and they would be floating around everywhere.
Mm.
African or European?
What?
Doesn't matter.
Well, African or European eggs born. Or sea or ocean or something.
Move along, Steve. Move along.
All right. Rob, do you want to take the Timothy Simons question?
Yeah, absolutely.
Paul, you're going to sit out reading questions this week because of your cough.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Sorry, Rob. Go for that, mate.
That's fine.
You can take the pervy question at the end, Paul. It'll be
If you like, if we get anything pervy, then, you know, you'll know after Dark Side this week. I can always chuck a Palpacino in if you want.
Yeah.
Ooh. If we got something short, because that knackers my throat. So from Timothy Simons, reads, "Hi, guys. I have a question about the Clone Wars TV series, ending with Yoda's three episodes in The Lost Missions, when he learns how to keep his identity in the Force after dying, after he defeats Darth Sidious. They say there is another, a Skywalker. Then you hear a baby crying, and he says Skywalker again. Were they referring to Luke? Does this mean the prophecy was about Luke? And that he is as powerful or almost as powerful as Master Yoda and Qui-Gon? Is that why Luke can hear Ben when he's still learning about the Force, and why he sees Obi-Wan, Yoda, and Anakin at the end of Episode 6? So, breaking it down, is the another Luke? Yes or no?
Yes, definitely. I've got the clip if you want to hear it. Did you want to hear the clip from the show?
Please,
Yes.
Okay, here we go then.
The one you know as Qui-Gon Jinn. Commune with you and guide your training. Like us, you shall learn to maintain your consciousness after death. Enlightenment. Spirit. Balance. There is another. Skywalker.
So that's him. That's Yoda sort of communing with the Force priestesses.
Yeah.
So you can quite clearly hear the quote that Timothy has been pointing out. There is another Skywalker.
That's interesting about that. Was it mirrored his reveal in Jedi?
It's absolutely.
And actually, it sounded like they were doing a kind of a read of that scene. Yeah.
It is absolutely. It is.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah. He's there's a little bit in red on the show notes.
Yes.
Which points out that it's a glimpse at the future, right? So his final trial complete, Yoda awakens from his nightmarish vision, and the Force priestesses state that he will train with Qui-Gon Jinn and learn to retain his identity in the future. Yoda begins to see the future and hears what will one day become his last words. There is another Skywalker. So... yes, absolutely, Luke, that they're referring to. And that line is a flash forward, essentially, to
Jedi.
His final moments in Jedi.
Yeah.
So they cover Luke and Leia, really?
I don't know. Because Leia's not really... she doesn't really feature into this whole Force thing very much, does she?
No.
But we learn in Bloodline that she kind of dropped out of that.
Yeah, she kind of knows bits and bobs, but she's, you know,
But yeah, I mean,
she can ride a bike, but she's not a BMXer.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's assuming, obviously, I know the answer to this, but obviously, Yoda's talking about Leia when he's dying, when he dies.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if this is a force, I was going to say a force forward. That's a hashtag force forward.
Yep. If this sounds like that's forward, another charity I can get behind.
Yeah, I've lost my train, but you know what I meant.
Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you might have done it again, actually, Steve. You might have broken this open for me a little bit. So this is a flash forward. So the another Skywalker that he's talking about...
is in the flash forward, is Leia.
Is Leia.
But they're referring to Luke.
Yeah.
Interesting, isn't it?
I'm never putting clothes on again.
Unless it's purely that he's just kind of... that's the sign that he's passed the test almost. You know, like repeat after me, and it's not just about repeating the words, it's about understanding what they mean in context.
Right, I mean, so context in the Clone Wars, another Skywalker is Luke.
Yeah, yeah, but what I'm saying is, I kind of envisaged it like the Countess is testing Yoda to see if he's learned enough to kind of to finish his trial.
Mm-hmm.
When he's repeating the words back, because she says the words first and then he repeats them, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, prove to me you understand what I'm telling you now. And the fact that he can say that and it's a flash forwards, it's like he understands finally how it all works. Like a kind of affirmation of what he's been through.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't necessarily. I mean, there may be. I confess, I haven't seen the episode, so I can't speak to.
I rewatched it.
There's something really obvious in the visual cue that I'm missing.
No, there isn't. It's very much just Yoda sort of in front of these priestesses, and then they kind of disappear and leave him to his own devices.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm wondering if this is the flash forward, then the other Skywalker is Leia.
Yeah.
But the baby crying is Luke.
Right.
Because that's he's the New Hope.
Mm-hmm.
So the baby that we hear crying is Luke. And that's the start of their journey back and, you know, defeating the Sith. But Yoda doesn't even know at this point that needs to happen. You hear Vader breathing in that clip.
Yeah.
But they don't even know that they need salvation yet. All they know is that there's a hidden Sith Lord.
So actually, he might not even understand
the context at all.
Because because Anakin's the only Skywalker he knows as well.
Yeah.
Mm. So why would he need to even think about it?
Yeah.
I know I berate Lucas a lot because he went off.
Really? Kept that quiet?
But no, you've got to give him credit in the late 70s or whenever he came up with this idea, probably early 70s, late 60s even. He's a blooming genius for think of this totally original idea of Jedi and not something like that was, you know, based on wizards or.
Yeah, Steve, you've got to read The Secret History of Star Wars. It's such a good book and you'd love it because it gives
It did base it loosely on like Camelot and, you know, the realm of stuff,
and samurai warriors and stuff.
Because did have a lot of mystery in the back of it as well. So
I knew there was a samurai link in there.
Well, he's a big Kurosawa guy, and that was the because it's got sort of story elements from is it Hidden Fortress, Mark?
Yeah, Hidden Fortress. Yeah. The Akira Kurosawa.
Wasn't the Ronin something to do with it as well?
Yeah, they're like sort of soldiers of fortune that they don't serve any one lord. They just kind of.
Yeah, with the whole thing about Luke, though, it was him because I mean, there's almost as if a Yoda sent a message afterwards to Ben because Ben is very expectant of Luke's sort of coming in Star Wars, isn't he? There's a bit of trepidation. It's like, are we ready? Is this the right time? And so on and so forth. But at the same time, Ben does know it's time, sort of thing, which is why he gives him that gentle little nudge and says, you know, you must come with me and learn the ways of the Force, and so on and so forth. So it's always Luke, yes.
Yeah, but...
that's who we're talking about, you mean, in terms of the bit in the scene.
In the clip, there's a lot... I see now, really, why Timothy's written this question in, because there's quite a lot going on here, isn't there?
Mm.
So... Is the other Skywalker in question, is it Luke? Yes and no. Yeah. At this point, in context,
yes,
because he's the new hope.
But not in terms of what he's saying.
That dialogue is a flash forward, which means Leia is the other Skywalker, and that's that information is given to Luke to motivate Luke to reboot the Jedi, I guess. Does it mean that Luke is the one in the prophecy?
No.
We've covered this before, and it's canon that Anakin is the one in the prophecy, right?
Yes.
So no.
This question will be the death of me.
Yeah. Luke isn't the one in the prophecy.
And it's pretty clear he's got importance, though.
Oh, extreme. He's the one that's there to enable the prophesized, like the chosen one, isn't he? He's there to enable him, put him back on his path. And the final part of Timothy's question is Luke as powerful as Yoda and Qui-Gon, as demonstrated by Luke's being able to commune with those that have become one with the Force? What do we make of that final part?
I don't think that illustrates anything, because what we've always been shown is that the person who needs to learn the skill is not the person on the receiving end, it's the person broadcasting it. So it's Qui-Gon who has to teach Yoda, who also has to teach Obi-Wan. So Luke is passive. Luke doesn't have any, you know, any input in it. It's Obi-Wan's ability to do it that means he can communicate with Luke at all.
I think it's like one of them having a mobile telephone, and it's useless unless the other one has something that can receive. So,
he has the Force. That's the whole point of it.
He is the offspring of the Chosen One, so he's probably. I would imagine his midichlorian count is quite high. Sorry, Steve.
I would say that's probably the reason. I'd imagine it's probably fair to say he's got a high count. Yeah.
And what we're seeing in Star Wars is a point we've covered briefly. So I'll be brief. But with Luke's emerging ability in the Force over the course of the original trilogy, he hears a voice in Star Wars. He sees a sort of vague ghost in Empire, and by the time we get the Jedi, he's got the full-on Alec Guinness experience.
Yeah.
So as Luke gets stronger in the Force, he gets more capable, and he sees the ghosts, and then he's able to see all three of them at the end of Jedi.
And actually converse with Obi-Wan.
Yeah, and this episode of The Clone Wars that Timothy's writing about is Yoda taking his first step into that area of Force ability. So until he's met with the priestesses, he hears Qui-Gon, doesn't see him. And and Qui-Gon explains that's not really... That's his fault, Qui-Gon's fault.
Yeah.
That he can't appear physically to Yoda. But it's also Yoda hasn't developed his ability yet and doesn't understand what they're doing yet until he's spent this time with the priestesses and done these trials. And he's had to face the dark side.
Yoda, at this point, though, he's 900 years old. Surely he's mastered it by now.
No, because they didn't even know about it. No, they know it's kind of the living. There's a difference between the living force and the cosmic force. So the Jedi practice the cosmic force, and Qui-Gon, as we know from episode one, is a bit of a renegade because he's always banging on about the living force.
Yeah.
And telling Obi-Wan, you need to learn more about the living force. And it's the living force that gives them the ability to maintain their identity within the force after death.
Right.
So him reaching out to Yoda, he's reaching out to the strongest person saying, this is the skill you need to learn, and this is where you need to go to learn it.
Yeah.
It's a bit like Excel, isn't it?
What?
Microsoft Excel.
All right, interested to see where this is going.
You take your basic thing, and you think you know it all. You go back, you're trying to do a VLOOKUP, hang on a minute, is there something else I'm missing here? Yeah, you need the intermediate course. You go on that, you think you know it all.
So you're saying
somebody drops in a raise, and it's like
you're saying like that the cosmic force is a VLOOKUP, and the living force is a pivot table.
The living force is a raise.
Oh, it's okay, right? I think I understand.
Get with the program, Rob.
Literally. Program is Excel for those paying attention.
Yeah.
Call them apps now, Steve.
That's Fema.
So do we think that Luke is as powerful as Yoda and Qui-Gon? I would say, I'm going to throw out a contentious point. I would say I think he's probably more powerful.
Okay.
Because he isn't he isn't encumbered by their dogmatic approach.
Okay, and so you're saying he's not got. It's not so much that he's not got. It's not so much that he's got the raw the same raw power, but he's not picking up bad habits.
And he's accessing it in different ways.
Yeah,
as we've seen, okay. I know a lot of people don't buy into this, but we've seen Luke wander backwards and forwards between the light side and the dark side, and he's able to do that. And he's driven by
like walking like Jack Sparrow.
Yeah, he's able to do it because he's driven by compassion. An altruistic means. He's not driven by a dogma, and he's not driven like the Sith. Like, he didn't have any sort of selfish end game. He wanted to save his father. And the Jedi are on one side saying, you've got to kill Darth Vader and the Emperor to restore balance. And he's saying, no, that's not what I need to do. I need to bring Anakin back. And that's what ended up happening. So I'd say he was probably more powerful than Yoda and Qui-Gon because he had those skill sets. And they lack those things.
Yeah, I'll go
maybe
with that.
Not, maybe not more powerful, but certainly had more foresight and trust in what could happen.
Yeah, like I say, he's not got the raw. He maybe doesn't have the raw materials, but he's not.
I mean,
like
they
say,
do actually. They do portray Yoda and Mace Windu to be rather binary in the original three, in the first three.
Yeah, films. For sure. Very much so, that's part of the thing of it, isn't it? You look on Anakin as more of a sympathetic character because you go, oh, you know, not only is he being manipulated, but also the people who are supposed to be looking out for him aren't really looking out for his interests.
He's failed, doesn't he? He's not. Yeah. He hasn't failed. He is failed.
Yeah.
Sort
of.
Yes.
And Luke very much almost like he just looks on the sunny side of the street and says, look, we can go in this direction. Trust me, it'll work.
Yeah.
I like the way that Luke actually didn't need to kill either Darth Vader or the Emperor Palpatine in the end. They killed each other.
Yeah, this is it.
Yeah, they were consumed by their own selfish ideals, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Well, Timothy, you've given us a lot to think about there. I recommend watching those episodes.
They're on my list.
Those final three episodes of The Clone Wars, they are absolutely fantastic, and they're really gorgeous to look at as well.
Oh, I bet.
So
yeah.
Well made.
Are they the ones with Darth Bane, or is that a different episode?
That is. It's Mark Hamill as Darth Bane.
Oh, nice.
I guess this is a sign of a true Star Wars person or me. I just can't watch them. I know it sounds awful. I hope there's listeners out there that can not feel bad about themselves now, because I just can't watch them. It doesn't do anything for me.
The animation,
Steve, there's about 60% of them that I struggle with because they just skew too young, but there's this stuff where it really is so well made. And Liam Neeson comes back to perform as Qui-Gon Jinn in that episode.
I'll definitely give him a go. Definitely give him a go.
Just the choice, just a few arcs, I think, Steve, would probably be something you would find rewarding. But some of it...
Do you watch him, Paul? Sorry, Mark.
That's fine.
I'm afraid not, no.
No.
Worth a try, guys.
Well, maybe Paul and I will watch him together one time when we're hooked up in bed, ill.
Aww. Clothed.
Very quick to point that out, Paul. Steve doesn't do clothed. All right, we're going to go to a quick break right now, which is so unlike us. And then when we come back, we're going to get into some more listener comms. We've still got some pretty deep questions to get to, so we'll be back in just a second. If you'd like to support what we do here at Talk Star Wars, you can do so by becoming a TSW sponsor. As little as £1 per month, given securely via PayPal, you can help us keep the lights on here at TSW. When you become a TSW sponsor, we will elevate you to VIP status. As a TSW VIP, you'll get access to an exclusive stream that provides you with fun downloads like HD wallpapers for your desktop, tablet, and mobile device, ringtones and text alerts, courtesy of our very own Audio Jedi, at Rob Wade Vision. You'll also receive a monthly newsletter with news about what's going on here at Talk Star Wars. And you'll get a priority release of the new Star Wars audio commentary series called TSW Feature Comms. All this for as little as £1 per month. Head to talkstarwars.co.uk/support and become a TSW sponsor today. And the Force will be with you always. Okay, we're back and we're going to jump straight back into listener comms. And this next email was from friend of the show, Joe Crouch.
He ain't no slouch.
No slouch in bed.
Oh, blimey.
She took it.
He
one
knows
step
more about
further
than I do, and he's my mate.
Right, this is what Joe's written. He said, hi, guys. Really enjoyed episode 51, particularly the discussion about Rey's lightsaber. After further discussion about what sort of lightsaber that would be, in the Talk Star Wars VIP Facebook group, which you can access by becoming a TSW sponsor, we started to talk about the idea that a kyber crystal could reject its user if used improperly. For instance, slaying a class of younglings rather than just changing its colour or simply corrupting, which made me think of saber crystals as being partially sentient, causing a relationship between the user and the saber to be less of a passive thing and more of a codependency. So with all that being said, could this codependency be altered by certain acts? Could there be benefits to strengthen this bond, or is that a bit too anime? Love to know what you guys think. May the force be with you, Joe. So what do you guys...
Always.
Oh, yeah, may the force be with you always.
Don't mess up your acronyms.
What do you make of this... this theory that there might be some...
I don't know if we've seen any real evidence of this, because we have seen sabers used to hack down kids and really the other terrible things, and yet everyone still seems to keep going on their journey.
Yeah, exactly.
Or maybe there is an effect, but we don't know the effect because the effect is just leading them down a darker journey, possibly. Maybe the effect is your post-actions after that. I don't know.
It'd be hilarious if the crystals were the evil ones, right?
Yeah. Well,
Emperor's going, just talking to the crystal, and the crystal's like, all right, yeah, I'll cut them all down. Make him think he did it.
Maybe all the crystals care about is feng shui.
He came in and all the chairs were out of place. Like, what are we going to do? He said, well, I'm going to tell you what we're not going to do. We're not going to leave these chairs like this.
My answer is really quick. I think if they could know now these really great ideas and implement back at the start, the lightsabers would be changing colour the moment somebody, they'd be like sparking and then changing colour as somebody turned to the dark side, like Kylo did on the bridge. How fantastic would that have been? But it's too late now. You can't just bring it in after everyone's, you know, it's not been in the prequels and original trilogy. I think it's a real shame, but I do agree with everything he's said. I think they're all fantastic ideas, just unimplementatable.
Yeah, the whole thing with the kyber crystal rejecting its user, it would probably have happened in Revenge of the Sith if that was going to be a thing.
Because I was like, the crystal's just like, whoa,
yeah,
whoa.
Yeah. And
where
it
did
just,
that come from?
You can imagine if it was that, it would either shut itself down so that the weapon becomes useless, or it would be forced to bleed and become the Red Blade.
If anything, though, they would have turned good after killing those stupid actors in The Younglings. They deserve to die.
Are your eyes yellow at this moment in time, Steve?
Yeah, they deserve to die. I love that scene.
Yes,
I want to see the uncut version where they...
Maybe the process is simply that somebody, depending on what side of the force you are feeling your direction going, that's the crystal that calls you.
I think there's a lot to that. Yeah, the relationship seems very symbiotic from the start.
The crystal is as dark as the owner.
Yeah, that's a great one, Paul. Maybe the crystal is tricking the owner looking good until the point when the owner becomes bad and the crystal goes, aha, I've got
so,
what I want.
By that... that's a great idea, Paul. So by extension, you could say that Anakin found a crystal that would allow him.
And the crystal found Anakin that would allow
the
crystal to behave in the way it should.
Yeah,
so it's completely symbiotic bonding.
Yeah.
It's going back to the thing where, you know, we spoke about this at length in several episodes where all things happen that way because they happen that way.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you find that the story is like it is. You find the crystal because you're meant to find that crystal, and you can't avoid that path no matter how hard you try.
Yeah, absolutely.
Crystal's prepared to go there with you.
Yeah, and it will reveal itself to you because that's the right one for you. That's the match. So I think that Joe's right. They are partially sentient, these crystals. And probably have midichlorian counts of their own, and that this is something that we might have revealed in Rogue One. The whole
it
thing
is something
with it
that concerns me. Sorry, finish your thing, Mark. And I'll...
Yeah, the whole thing with the codependency. I'm not sure about that. Just because we haven't seen that codependent relationship affected by like Anakin's turn in Sith.
I agree. There you go. That one's a wrap. We sorted it. Right, next.
Right, okay. No, apparently we don't want to hear my bit. Right.
Go, Rob.
Oh, no, go on, Rob.
No, it's only a quick one. I was going to say this one. This kind of supports my theory that the crystal and the person have a symbiosis, and then that the crystal might go along with the owner to a point. Hence my point about Dooku.
Yeah.
But also, it's all a bit Harry Potter, isn't it?
But the wand choosing the wizard.
Well, not only the wand choosing the wizard, but the wizard not being able to use anybody else's wand. Because it won't work right for
but
them.
But that's because it's already been chosen, though.
Yeah, but it's
yeah,
all...
No, I know what you mean, but...
That doesn't stretch into the kyber crystals, though, does it?
Yeah, through Harry Potter.
To a slight degree.
No, because people can use... Like, Anakin can use Obi-Wan's lightsaber and vice versa, and Anakin can use Dooku's Sith lightsaber.
Yeah, true. Finn picks up.
Ray
Finn
uses
picks up Kylo's without any worry. Yeah,
Finn uses the Skywalker lightsaber. He's not even forcing
the whole Harry Potter thing. If you defeat somebody, that wand actually kind of falls in love with you. Their wand becomes your wand as well. So
yeah, true. Okay. Yeah, so like I say, it all just feels a bit, you know, wand chooses the wizard, and I've not been. I wasn't a fan of that when I got that impression in Force Awakens. I'm even less of a fan of the idea of it getting more and more defined.
Hmm.
What I do like about Joe's question was the original point he made in the Facebook chat. He was talking about, he mentioned to me as an aside that he thought a broadsword design might be really cool, like a whacking great blade rather than something that's sort of, you know,
good
normal sword size.
Cutlass or something.
For Rey,
because she's used to wielding something a bit heftier. And I thought that was really cool. Boom.
I wonder how far they'll go with the new lightsaber designs.
Interesting, because they're
being a bit bold in the TV shows.
Yeah.
But will they go that bold on screen?
Man, you say that. I mean, Dooku's is awesome.
Oh, his is amazing.
It's beautiful, isn't it? It's like an antique for Christ.
One thing to keep in mind.
Is that the one with the curved handle?
Guess what hat I'm wearing, Mark?
What hat are you wearing?
I'm wearing the cynical marketing hat.
Oh, God, here we go.
Any lightsaber design... This is kind of a nice one, in a way. Any lightsaber design they come up with for Rey has to be not expertly wieldable, but it has to be something that a small girl can hold.
Well, they can scale those things down, can't they, when they produce the toys and make them whatever they want them to be.
But then it doesn't feel right, does it? You know, it's not authentic at that point. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a cynical marketing, but I think it is true. I think they will think about designs in terms of something that's not completely ridiculously oversized for a small girl to use. I mean, they can deal with the staff. I still think a double blade might be in her future.
That's what I think
that'd
too.
Be pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think that'd be good. Awesome. Nice one. Thanks for that, Joe.
Yes.
Thank you,
and thanks for feeding that conversation in the Facebook group as well. It was very interesting.
Oh, man, it blew up. I went away for 10 minutes and I came back and I was like, nope, I can't get in this. It's already well past me.
It'll take far too long.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, we got a message from Dave Donovan. Steve, you going to take that one?
Yeah, Dave Landonovan, question for the Rogue One episode. Why did Bail Organa reach out to Obi-Wan and not Yoda? He alone knows they're still alive and where they are. Obi-Wan is the more dangerous option as he's watching Bail's daughter's brother from afar. Look at the context. The Emperor has built the Death Star. It shouldn't have been an either-or. He should have reached out to both Yoda and Obi-Wan. A ragtag rebellion would need all the allies it can get, no? We don't know he didn't send an envoy to plead with Yoda to come back and fight, but it's portrayed that he chose Obi-Wan. Would it not make more sense to choose both over just one? Does he want to reunite Leia with Luke? The box Leia discovers in Bloodline that he's left her, telling her the truth of it all, only adds to that question. Wow, I didn't get a word of that because I was concentrating.
You did real good, Steve.
That last sentence refers to some stuff that you and Paul did you finish Bloodline?
Afraid not, no.
No, okay. So this that last line sort of refers to a lot of information that came out in that book. But for the purposes of this question, we don't really need to go into that. We can just sort of speculate as to why he chose Obi-Wan and not Yoda, which may be revealed in Rogue One. I personally don't think it will be. But let's go around the table. Why choose Obi-Wan and not Yoda, Paul?
That could have been various reasons. Could have been just been distance of getting the information to somebody, emergency situation and so on. Yoda could have been, Christ knows, the other side of the galaxy. Don't know. He just simply didn't know where Yoda was, maybe. I don't know. It's a very open question, to be honest. I don't know. He just knew Obi-Wan was at hand.
Rob, is it as simple as that? Is it geography?
I think there's a number of possibilities. I think geographical proximity is a good one, actually. I think Paul's might well be onto something there. We don't know that he's not been in contact with Obi-Wan before, whereas there might have been a while since he spoke to Yoda. And also military strategy. If they want somebody who's got any kind of military experience, Kenobi is the stronger general.
He was the general, yeah.
Yeah, whereas Yoda was just, he turns up for episode two, he gives one order and walks around like Johnny Big, you know.
Yeah.
but he doesn't really demonstrate any strategy, whereas in the Clone Wars, obviously Obi-Wan is leading an army or was certainly fighting alongside a large-scale army.
Military was required, not spirituality.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't need, you know. And also, he's getting, let's be fair, he's getting on a bit. Like, I don't want to be unkind, and I'm not saying he's got no value, but Obi-Wan is, you know, a spring chicken by comparison.
That's true. Steve, why Obi-Wan and not Yoda?
I agree with both Paul and Rob for once. It's not, but I don't believe it's geography, because they can get anywhere really quick in Star Wars. It's kind of one of those physical things.
For storytelling purposes, they can, yeah, but not necessarily for logistics.
No, but it's hyper light speed, isn't it? It's super hyper light speed. But I do believe that Yoda's in exile, so how would they know where he was?
That's a pretty good point. I mean, we don't...
Now, let me just check this.
We don't have to know. Bail doesn't have to know his location, but I would suspect that one reason to choose Obi-Wan over Yoda is that Yoda's the bigger gun, and you might want to keep him in reserve. So if Obi-Wan falls, which ultimately does, you've still got Yoda in the background to pick up the training of whatever Skywalker survives. And Bell knows at least one's going to survive because he's got her very close to him.
Much as that said, if either one of them was worth their salt, they should have both known before he even reached out to them.
Yeah.
I can't find necessarily any evidence that Yoda ever mentions where he's going.
No. In that three arc...
He says, exile, I must go.
That three-episode arc of The Clone Wars, he goes to Dagobah.
Okay.
That plays a big part in there. He's sent there because of its potency in the Force. Mm-hmm. He knows that. I don't think he communicates that to anybody.
No.
We don't know that anyone else knows it until Obi-Wan learns it, and I suspect that Obi-Wan only finds out where Yoda is when they commune through the Force remotely much later on. And I'm putting something out on Friday, so this is going up on Monday, so it's been out all weekend. It's an insight into what Obi-Wan was doing. This is only going out to the VIPs. It's an insight into what Obi-Wan was doing whilst he was in exile on Tatooine.
Okay.
It's fascinating.
Right.
You'll get that.
Did you go to stay on what's the place again that Yoda was?
Dagobah.
Would you go and live on Dagobah on your own for 2 weeks with no one else there?
No.
I would, because you might come back with a Force.
You'll come back with something.
I would. It would be scary, but I would definitely go to Dagobah. Like a weekend break. If I could do all-inclusive, I'm not going to go and hunt down...
Well, Yoda was on all-inclusive.
You know that that review we read earlier, Steve, and they said about tangents?
Yeah,
that is why the show runs long. I'm just pointing that out.
new Twitter poll: do you want Stephen to just be naked and nothing more? Yes or no?
All right, let's get into. Thank you for that, Dave.
Did Yoda build his hut?
Good question.
That's a great question.
That is the next question from Paul Jones.
Does he have mini scaffolding? Because how would he reach the roof?
It's the force. He's got full scaffolding.
Yeah, he comes. Luke comes back in Jedi. And he's like,
R2's only a few feet high. Why wasn't he allowed in?
Do you think that all the huts in Star Wars are like Rey's bread that she puts in water, and you just add a tablet and they just come up?
Surely a rainstorm would just might make it grow to an enormous height. Dagobah was always round. He'd be like Starkiller Base by the end of the year.
Yeah. They are all round, though. They're all domed.
They are domed. This is true. They're the kind of Inuits of.
Yeah, and some poor bugger's got a 1/4 portion, and he gets a leak every time it rains.
Yeah, I like the idea that Luke goes back to him in Jedi and says, "You didn't have that extension last time I was here."
It's just grown an extra.
But he's had some work done while he was away.
He found another little conservatory. On
it. I don't know what for. Who's he going to leave it to?
Exactly.
Well,
there is another Yoda.
There's some tangents for you.
Yeah, that was a lot of tangents. I wish I hadn't said anything. Right, next question is from Anthony Jenkins. He says, "Hi again. I wanted to make sure you got this before the Rogue One premiere in case it happens. Could something happen in Rogue One that makes the events of the original trilogy impossible, thus opening the possibility of there being an influence across time in the new movies? I think it's a long shot, but an interesting idea all the same. Given Rian Johnson's directed Looper, it would work in terms of Episode 8. Plus, they have said something will happen in Episode 8 that's completely new to Star Wars. Could that be messing around with time, Anthony?"
I hope not.
Oh, God, I hope not.
We all hate that. We all hate the idea of that, don't we? I think that's...
Oh, I'm not a fan at all of that
idea.
I'd
rather have the mistakes of the past in Star Wars than try and story them out with a time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Paul, you're very quiet.
Yeah, I'm just sorry, Anthony. No.
No.
Great question. Made us
think. It's a really good question, and it's a perfectly good thing to think about. I just really hope it doesn't happen.
Yeah, time travel belongs in Star Trek. It doesn't belong in Star Wars. No. If you wanted to give somebody a glimpse forward, like we've just been discussing the Yoda scene in the Clone Wars episode, mm-hmm. if you want to give them a glimpse of the future through the Force, that's fine.
Yeah, fine.
If you want Rey to be able to see the past in glorious Technicolor, that's fine.
It would undermine everything, wouldn't it? It would undermine all your belief.
Yeah.
Technically, time travel does happen in Star Wars quite often.
With the hyperspace travel.
They always go hyperspace. They go hyperspace a lot.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But in what Anthony's referring to more directly...
I know, I'm just being obstropolously pedantic.
There's no way... There's no way they're going to jeopardize the first standalone film by doing something so out of character. They would have
looked at every single needle on this. It's going to be okay.
Yeah, and they wouldn't want to derail everything. They might want to like recontextualize certain elements of the story by colouring in a little more detail, but they're not going to jeopardize what's gone before in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I mean, one thing to keep in mind is they would have looked at... I mean, it sounds like a silly thing to say on face value, but hear me out. They would have looked at things like Terminator Genesis. When you start messing with the timeline of events that have already happened, things get really dumb really fast, and it's hard to tie these things in. It's already going to be hard enough for the story group to tie all these threads together in a linear story that kind of follows a timeline. If you then start adding in alternate timelines and stuff like that, it's going to be painful.
If the story group have proven anything so far, they've proven that they are all extremely talented people, Kiri Hart, Pablo Hidalgo, and Leland Chi, but they haven't been able to place story elements in the expanded storylines and have them tie neatly into what's going on in the main storyline, which is the films, right?
Yeah.
If you look at Catalyst, that they wander up to a point and then back off from it pretty quickly. And I found there's a lot of that in the Catalyst novel. Mm-hmm. And the comic books as well, I'm seeing things that they kind of flirt around with these new ideas.
Yeah.
And then it's something that can disappear very, very quickly and never have an impact on anything that takes place on the big screen.
I think it's there's probably a certain amount of deference and respect to Lucas, which I think, and rightly so, because he is still the daddy of it all, you know? Even if he's not the person who's taken it forwards himself, he's still...
Yeah.
He still deserves utmost respect, and I imagine that there's nothing the story group's going to change of his.
They won't. They won't. And they and what I meant about the stuff that they weren't quite landing in the books and the comic books is that they wouldn't for a second make any changes that will derail A New Hope, for example.
No. Yeah.
Because they just can't. They just can't do it. They've proven with Catalyst they had an opportunity to set the stage for Rogue One, but it's clear that when they were writing Catalyst, they were still writing Rogue One, so they couldn't weave those things together as well as they should have. You know, that docking ring that we see in the trailers, they kind of hint at that having a purpose in the book, but it would appear now that they're talking about something completely different.
Right.
So I don't think that they would take too many chances with this. They need... A New Hope has set rules that Rogue One needs to play by, and they're not going to break those because it will just cause them bigger headaches further down the line. So introducing time travel and some sort of paradox or some ripple butterfly effect through the Star Wars movies, no way they're going to go anywhere near that. They will alienate too many people, and it will derail the standalone films before they've even started.
Agreed.
Don't you kind of wish Star Wars won? As in... the first ever Star Wars film started with first ever Jedi, and you didn't have any backstory, and then we could have it all on film, and there'd be hundreds of films now, and everything, it wouldn't be any canny canon or any tangents within the films or things you had to learn. It'd all be on screen and easily understandable, a bit like
Steve,
Harry Potter.
That would put us out of a podcast, mate.
Yeah.
Be careful what you wish for, buddy.
All right, we've got one more listener question this week, and then we can get in our Twitter polls, and then we'll be out of part one. Oh no, we've got a couple of spoilery bits, and then we'll be out of part one. Who wants to take Chris Windu Holland's question?
I'll take it.
Go for it.
All right. So from Chris Windu Holland's, thanks for answering the questions again. If you could just remind me, say every hour into the pods, to go turn around and go home, that would save me a lot of bus fares.
Chris, now is probably the time. Looking at the clock.
Yeah. Chris, also, we're not your mum. Come on. Talk Star Wars, not, you know, wash behind your ears. That's good advice.
That's a great podcast.
It's great advice. quick question, stroke idea. I watched A New Hope last night, and Vader says that the plans for the Death Star were transmitted to the Tantive, not delivered by hand. I'd imagine this will have to remain in place. So my question is, how do you think they get the plans to the Resistance? Assuming they mean Rebellion.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, he means Rebellion. Wouldn't it be cool if Chopper transmits them after the space battle, as we have seen what we all hope is the Ghost? Also, I think that the Boba Fett movie has been shelved because they're going to use him as the main protagonist in the Han Solo movie. Fett and Greedo face off against Solo and Lando. This would tie in with their relationships in the original trilogy. As much as I like the character of Fett, I believe that he's fundamentally a bad guy, and I think people would struggle to root for him in a standalone movie. Thanks for another great podcast. Keep up the good work. Although I'm still trying to erase what and where you would have your Star Wars themed tattoos. Chris. All right, so break it down. How are they going to get the plans to layer on the Tantive 4?
I don't think it'll be Chopper, personally.
That would be... I like where he's going with it in terms of how cool would it be, but I think it's pretty unlikely.
Yeah, because it's too wide, and it depends on people knowing who that character is. And even on this podcast... Paul and Steve, you probably don't know who Chopper is, right?
We've spoken about him on previous podcasts, so that's all I know.
Yeah.
What you told me.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit too much of a target reference, I think. And if they were to include Chopper throughout the story, then absolutely. But I think that K2SO is going to fulfill this function.
The thing to bear in mind as well for people who are disappointed by this possibility is that within Star Wars... the demographic within the Star Wars of people who've seen the movies versus, and also have seen and follow Rebels is very, very thin.
Yeah, that Venn diagram is not flattering, is it?
Exactly. I mean, you know, Rebels is a good show, and I'm actually starting to get into Series 3 now that we've got it in the UK, or parts of it. We're a little behind the US and Canada, but we've still got some. I'm actually catching up with it. I'm really enjoying Series 3, and I think there's a lot to like about it. I probably could talk about it in more depth on another episode, because obviously time is short. But I think that the Venn diagram is very small for people who get both and who follow both. because ultimately Rebels, as good as it is a kid show on Disney XD.
Yeah.
Not something that everybody who watches Rogue One is going to go, oh, I better be caught up on Rebels. You don't need to be. You shouldn't expect to be. You shouldn't expect to need to be.
No, we're going to get to the whole Rebels of it all in just a second in our spoiler section.
You know Leia's adopted father?
Bail Organa. Yeah,
Bail Organa, who's in Rogue One, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's got to involve Leia coming into contact with him for some point. And could that be where the plans are? Perhaps he dies and gives them to her?
He dies. Ooh,
They kill him off before Alderaan? That's bold.
I think he dies on Alderaan, doesn't he? I think that's in Bloodline.
Have they ever established it for sure?
I thought that was...
Maybe.
I thought that was mentioned in Bloodline that a father was on the planet when it blew.
You might be right, actually. I'm not sure now, though. But yeah, I think you're right.
So maybe she takes off from Alderaan. He gives her the plans. She gets up in the Tantive and then inserts them into R2-D2. Ooh,
yeah.
Wow. Okay.
This one point, actually, the idea of him being, of the plans being transmitted to the Tantive, is why, to me, you don't need a big, long Leia cameo. Because actually, she's not going to be relevant for a huge amount of the story. She can just be, like I said before, I kind of picture it as a shot from behind. You got the white gown and the buns. So anybody who's seen the first film knows who that is.
Mm-hmm.
And you just see her from the back, intercept, you know, just take the plans and put them on a disc. Maybe start turning towards the camera and fade to black credits. That's kind of how I picture it in my head. It's a very minimal, less is more for stuff like that, especially with this whole kind of Uncanny Valley stuff. They're going to potentially try teasing.
They're going to flirt with a bit of that, aren't they? I've got something I want to say on that subject. Okay. But Paul, before I say anything, how do they get the plans to Leia?
Email.
Just email, just an attachment.
Just an attachment, zip file.
like the old family.
I actually kind of hoping it's. I'm kind of hoping it's kind of raw. I like the idea of Ray and not Ray. Sorry, what's her name?
Jin.
Oh yeah,
Jin. Jin. Sort of what we assumed was her doing this, and sort of running across the beach with a bloody great hard drive in her hands.
Yeah.
And I just like the idea of this physical element leaving the Death Star to a ship and the ship being chased, another physical element and so on. So, but they, you say that, you know, they were transmitted. So,
yeah. Well, there's no reason why.
What is the receptive element? Is the performance.
Yeah. The end game for her might be just getting it to a station where she can transmit it.
Mm.
And it's all about, and you know, that's her kind of end game. And once she does that,
going along,
that's what happens next.
Yeah. Going along with Rob's sort of idea of how the film could end, maybe you just see, like you say, girl in white with buns on a laptop.
Yeah.
It slaps the laptop down, end of film.
I would here's how I see it going. I doubt that many of those rebels will make it off of Scarif, to be honest.
I'd be very surprised if many of them do.
I think we're going to see quite a bloodbath.
I think it's going to be a bloodbath. I suspect I like the symmetry of a droid delivering the plans to the Rebellion, and then a droid taking the plans from the Rebellion to Obi-Wan. I like that that sort of symmetry. It's the George Lucas rhyming stanza.
Yeah.
So how about K2SO leaves Scarif on the shuttle Tidarium?
Right.
Docks with one of, like, we've seen Home One, we've seen the medical frigate and all that stuff in this space battle, haven't we, in the trailers for Rogue One?
Yep.
So he docks there. K2SO gives the plans to Bail Organa, whoever, which is an echo of Revenge of the Sith, where we see the droids fall into his possession. So then he's got the plans, and it's all in this big space battle. And then he transmits them to Leia. So maybe the bulk of the Leia CGI will be a hologram.
Oh, yeah, that works.
And then Bail can say, I'm transmitting the plans to you. Go. I know Kyle at Tumbling Saber wants him to say go and get Obi-Wan from Tatooine, but I think he'll just say go. And then we'll see.
Maybe they've talked about it before.
The film will end with the Tantive making the jump to hyperspace And the Star Destroyer leaving in pursuit.
Yeah, I'm wondering if there's some kind of duality to it as well, possibly. As much as there was a transmission, there was also a physical version of them coming along, hopefully. They surely had some kind of redundancy backup plan, not just one transmission.
Yeah, because we see Jim with that massive hard drive, don't
that's
we?
That's the thing, and that's what I want to believe. I want some kind of... I do want a physical mechanic attached to this. Not instead of just a press button, they transmitted, done. No, this needs to be a bit more raw. So I'm wondering if they've got some kind of dual mechanism in place where there is two or three methods of getting these plans out. Mm. One of them's got to work.
Yeah, and the one they choose maybe is the one that's easiest to do at the time, or
and the last the transmission to the
is their last resort or something.
Is the last resort the only one that gets through? Who knows? There you go. I think we've just blown the film.
it makes sense that their intention was to go to Tatooine completely because Leia's obviously told R2 to get in an escape pod at some point and get himself down there.
Yeah.
Because it's too coincidental otherwise, and the Force doesn't work like that. It happens because it happens because it happens.
Mm.
And they are over Tatooine, and Leia was obviously heading there, allowing the, the Imperials, the Empire, to chase them.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is how it's all supposed to work. Maybe Leia had a force forward and knew that that's what she should do.
I don't know. I think part of what you said is absolutely spot on. I think when she leaves this battle, presumably at the end of Rogue One, we'll know. This time next week, we'll know. When she leaves the battle and she makes a jump to hyperspace, she's going to Tatooine personally to land that ship, get Obi-Wan.
Bring him along.
And take him back to the core with her, whether that's to Coruscant or Alderaan or wherever it is they need to go.
Yavin.
Sorry, I just dropped my pen.
Right.
With extreme prejudice, apparently.
I just dropped my pineapple, that's weird.
So that was quick.
Oh, my.
Yeah, thank you.
So initially I think that's the plan. Get to Tatooine, land, pick him up, and then get back to wherever they're going, Yavin 4. But with that Star Destroyer in pursuit, I think she had to improvise, and that's why she loaded the plans in there, and she's just sort of fired that escape pod down to the surface.
Oh, no, she would have been going to Alderaan, wouldn't she, originally? Because that's where she tells Obi-Wan to go.
Take him to her father, right?
That's right, yeah.
Deliver you to him on Alderaan, yeah. So the idea is go there, pick him up, head back to Alderaan. So we know Bail's going to Alderaan from that line of dialogue. You're absolutely right. But the Star Destroyer meant she had to improvise, and she was hoping that her NGO credentials that we discussed last week, her mercy missions, would get her out of trouble. Mm-hmm. When she had to face off against whoever was on board that Star Destroyer, and turns out to be Vader.
Yeah.
So that whole thing with her firing the plans down to the surface was another last-ditch attempt to get them to Obi-Wan. So maybe that's a clue at how Bail will handle this. Maybe it was initially his intention to get the plans and go to get Obi-Wan.
I think that's
and
the
then
plan,
he gets caught up in the battle and has to fire him to the
I think that's dialogue actually in A New Hope. I feel like that's part of the hologram.
Is it?
Yeah, I feel like she says something that suggests that
my mission
Bail
to
would
bring
have gone
it to
himself
him.
If he could have.
Yeah.
This also plays into my idea that Obi-Wan is being sought out for his military knowledge, because if they found plans, they're going to need somebody who can spot a weakness, and Yoda's no good for that necessarily. Whereas Obi-Wan might have a military insight.
And there could also be the idea that if Obi-Wan's going to leave Tatooine, the chances are he's going to bring Luke with him.
Maybe.
And even though they don't know that Luke's grown into the young man that he's grown into, but they might just think if Obi-Wan comes with us, we bring the New Hope. The reason they've snatched him away is to bring him back at some point. So maybe that's his thinking. But
yeah,
good stuff.
Second
part. This is everything that Paul said a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
About Fett being a bit like Deadpool, Paul.
That was me.
Oh, was that you? Oh, sorry, Rob.
No. Rob always takes credit for whatever I say.
I wish.
So is Boba Fett? For a start, I don't think he's on the back burner. I think that project's probably dead.
Just don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Move along.
Yeah.
I agree too.
As a secondary character in the Han Solo movie, fine.
Mm-hmm.
But he won't work with his helmet. He's
crikey. I mean, let's be honest. He's a secondary character in all the movies.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Yeah.
He's not very charismatic
in Jedi. He's popular because
his armor looks nifty.
That's it. He's got a cool uniform. He's got nothing else. He can't even fly his jetpack well.
No, but the...
and also the prequels ruined Boba Fett.
Yeah,
they completely ruined him.
Yeah, I think that character's probably best left on the shelf
now. Human head weighs 8 pounds.
No. I think you're going
mixed up with a different movie.
I think you're drawing on the wrong movie.
Jerry he lifts up his dad's head and it's as light as a feather.
But you used to quote some Jerry Maguire. How are we supposed to connect those synaptic dots, Steve?
Well, you know Star Wars. You're supposed to be the expert, mate.
I'm supposed to be
levity in all this. I don't know.
Steve,
the film. You're the buff, all right?
You've got to... He is in the buff. Steve, you've got to pay closer attention to the Attack of the Clones. You see Jango's head fly out of that helmet.
Yeah, you do.
Why didn't he pick up his helmet? Why doesn't he pick up his real head? What sort of son is he?
Because it's kind of creepy.
Hang on a minute. If I'm wearing a glove and somebody lops off my hand, I want somebody to pick up my hand, not the glove, and go, oh, look at this nice glove.
Depends how cool your glove is.
Yeah,
that helmet's pretty cool.
I know, right? Well, obviously not very good. It's not very protective, but it's pretty cool looking. Not really.
So
it needs more neck
joint.
All right, we're spiraling down one of those tangent things again.
Couldn't exactly Aral diet it back on, could he?
No, he couldn't. Chris, I think the answer to your question is that yes, Fett is too much of a bad guy to be a central character.
He's not that interesting.
Fett's just too dull.
It's also been too perverted, isn't it, over the course of the trilogy.
He needs to be given more interest. He's barely in, like, you know. Paul's absolutely right, and Steve's absolutely right as well. He's barely in those movies, and he's not very effective when he's in
the movies where he's at, the storylines where he's at centre stage. It's not the character that we fell in love with. The boy through the Clone Wars, that's not the character that we want to see.
No.
I think he's best used as a foil to Han in some way.
Yeah. I don't even want to see him in that film. It'll be too expected.
I don't want the description that Chris gave, which is the like almost like a tag team match.
Yeah,
you know, it's like a weird sort of WWE pay-per-view. I would like to see some sort of weird kind of the seeds of a rivalry between Boba Fett and Han Solo to understand why Boba Fett's so keen to go the extra mile versus his other bounty hunter colleagues.
Just likes money.
I mean, don't we all? I like the idea that he's going to kind of have beef with those two over the course of his films, whether his starring role in every single one or not, we don't really know. But I don't want the weird sort of tag team dynamic. It's a bit, especially as they need to, Han and Lando need to part on bad terms.
I don't even want Lando as a prominent character throughout the whole movie either. I want to see new things coming in.
Yeah.
One of them to lace some new bits together, and then Lando's appeared. Okay, cool. We know this isn't going to end well, but let's go with it.
Can I tell you guys my hopes for Emilia Clarke?
Is it pervy?
She'll never do it.
No, it's not pervy. I want her to be a villain.
Yes, yeah, you did mention that previously.
Maybe an Imperial or
if in the days in the academy, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, I want her to play that sort of role.
That would be cool.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. Rather than a love interest. Okay, right. Let's wrap it up. Thank you very much, Chris. We're going to get very, very quickly into Twitter poll results from last week. The question was, with the recent reveal that Boba Fett was going to be the third at Star Wars Story movie before being cancelled, we'd like to know which of these you would prefer. A Rogue One sequel, a Han Solo sequel, a post-Jedi Luke movie, or a Clone Wars movie. A lot of people literally pooped, because I'd mentioned a Rogue One sequel. I know Kathleen Kennedy said there isn't going to be one. The question was, what would you prefer? Personally, I think there is room for a Rogue One sequel, and I would like to see it.
Okay.
So there's no need to soil yourself just because that was an option in the... that was
good advice
option.
For us all.
Yeah. I'm not going to soil myself, but I am going to ridicule you.
Yeah, because it's obviously number three.
I didn't soil myself.
No.
Three?
Steve,
mate, I'll tell you what. That would be more dull than you can imagine. If the Aftermath books are anything to go by, he's not doing them. He's not doing much for that movie.
Who's that, sorry?
Luke. If Aftermath's anything to go by, he's not really doing a lot.
Yeah, but they could tie in Heir to the Empire, couldn't they?
Well, they have to bring that back into canon.
Yeah, they won't do any of that stuff
elsewhere in the
Jawa movie.
Right, look, here's the results, because we need to wrap this episode up. So we got 3,949 impressions on this Twitter poll. 46% of people that took the time to vote wanted to see a post-Return of the Jedi Luke movie.
Yay!
Which I think is a really cool idea. 203 people voted in that one, so thank you for that, guys. Here goes next week's Twitter poll. I'm just calling it out of drafts now. We are expecting a Phantom Menace cameo in Rogue One, so which episode one character can we expect to see? Will we see Jar Jar Binks, Mass Amida, Watto, or Darth Maul? Or you can quote the tweet and add your own option. That is going live.
Darth Maul, he's dead.
He's not dead, Steve. Have you not learned anything from doing this podcast?
I want to see Darth Maul, actually.
No. I don't want any of them.
I think it's this one.
I have one of them.
You don't. You can quote and put your own option in there, mate.
Okay.
Excellent. Right, that's next week's part. Let's pin to our profile, so have a bit of fun with that. I suspect it's going to be Jar Jar, personally.
Okay, I'm thinking Mass Amida.
Why would they do that? They would not do that. Surely not.
I think they would, and they would try and redeem him. Mass Amida is at 100% already. Okay,
yeah,
right.
Would you leave, Rob, as well?
What's that, mate?
If they put Jar Jar in?
No.
And you are...
Take a lot to make me leave.
All right, guys, we're nearly at 90 minutes. So we've got a couple of images. We're just going to kick around very, very briefly. So they do contain spoilers for Rogue One. So if you're a little bit gun-shy about spoilers, then you might want to skip the rest of this episode and join us on part two, which comes out on Wednesday.
Right.
And there will, just a reminder, there will be no TSW After Dark Side this week. So if you're still with us, this is spoiler territory. Guys, you're looking at your show notes. Can you see this first image that Nathan Wong Kenobi Roberts shared with us?
Yep.
What do we make of this guy with a face mask on?
Bane's got an older brother.
I think it's Darth Bane. Steve, you're all right looking at these.
And Scaroofers,
actually. I'm not looking. I'm trying to quote tweet. I'm trying to get it to type Qui-Gon Jinn instead of quilt on me.
A quilt on me. Okay. So you want Jedi Master quilt on me?
Steve, you are obsessed with comfort.
I'm more interested, actually, Mark, on the picture on the board on the right hand side.
Yes, exactly. So this is what Nathan pointed out to me. So you've got that dummy is definitely a mock up of the designs pinned to the wall, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So is that Vader?
Yes. Yes.
I think it has to be.
It's almost a given, isn't it? I mean, who else could go through that situation? He's got no arms, no legs, and can hardly breathe. So,
this is presumably what's floating in that Bacta tank.
So we do think it's a Bacta tank, don't we? So, yeah.
I think so.
Tell you what I will say is disappointing. I would have hoped that his mask was being held on by more exciting technology than elastic bands.
Yeah.
Well, this is just, there might just be a
Well, Luke had that rubber band thing on in his Bacta tank, didn't he?
Oh, I suppose so, yeah. Maybe it's probably the same tech, isn't it? It just comes in black.
Yeah. So the only thing that led me to think that this might be something other than Vader is the lack of the mechanical right arm in the concept drawings.
Okay.
Because he kept that mechanical arm, didn't he?
Yeah, but he doesn't necessarily have to be wearing it all the time. Especially if he's in Bacta, it might rust.
No, I guess that's true, actually, yeah. I guess that's true.
So with the mask?
That's not necessarily made of metal, I guess. I don't really know.
But I like the idea that this might even be Galen being kept in
that
tank.
Why would he be a multiple amputee?
Because I suspect that they would have.
Do you think Vader gives a bit back of what he suffered?
Possibly.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
No, Mark, look at that model. That's Anakin, mate.
Yeah, I think
it's Anakin. It's Anakin.
I love the way it does look, doesn't it? I love that thought process, Paul. The idea that Vader's like,
you want some of that?
Eye for an eye kind of thing.
Limb for a limb.
That would show Vader as being this bad guy we'd always heard about, right? Because we haven't really seen him do anything this dark.
That's true.
But yeah, it does very much look like Vader. I'd say 90-10 split that's Vader. And that's going to be so cool to see that in that back to tank. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Steve, you still with us?
Yeah, I'm refraining from looking
at. Okay, well, you can look at the next image. The final image is the last thing we're going to talk about on this part of the podcast. This is proof that there is a Star Wars Rebels crossover with Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
And that little arrow is pointing to the ghost, the ship.
I can see that one.
That's the ship from the animated series.
I'm cool with that. Perfectly cool with that. And I'm actually cool with that being the only Rebels cameo in the entire film.
Yeah, that's cool, isn't it?
It's just a nice little bit of fan service, and it doesn't hamstring the plot to conform to any timeline stuff. It's just they're there, they're helping.
Yeah.
Because they're part of the crew.
I had a conversation on Twitter today about whether or not we'll see that ship destroyed.
I wouldn't have thought so.
No, I don't think that they're going to do that.
No.
I do think that there's room for the Rebels to exist still, parallel to our main heroes in the OT. They could be off conducting other missions, which could potentially be the sequel to Rogue One when they take the Bothan spies onto the raid to get the plans for the second Death Star.
Tell you what, though, it does kind of suggest that Thrawn isn't going to be as successful as we might think.
Yeah,
which puts me on slight edge, because that sort of defeats the point of him in the first place.
Yeah,
bring him in because all the other ones like Vader and Tarkin have not been able to succeed, and they bring another bloke. He goes, "Oh, I'm a genius. Oh, never mind."
Yeah, I still can't outwit this hapless group.
Yeah,
yeah. I thought that was really cool though, and the guys at Tumbling Saber mentioned on this week's episode, I don't know if you heard it, Rob, that they really wanted to see the ghost in a cameo. Yes. And there it is. So I suggested to them that they must have been beside themselves this week.
Yeah.
Good call. All right, let's wrap this episode up right there. Thank you for listening to us again this week. This is part one, and part two will be out on Wednesday. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star review in iTunes and take advantage of our Ron Burgundy guarantee. So whatever you write in there, I will read, as long as it's clean. Email us your questions and comments at talkstarwarsinfo@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us on one of our many social networks such as Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and many, many more. Gentlemen, let's have a quick round of where people can find you between episodes. Stephen?
I can be found naked in bed, but also at Wild About Nature on YouTube and Twitter.
Nice one. Paul?
At Movie Score News on Twitter and moviescorenews.com on the interweb.
Splendid stuff, sir. Rob?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Rob Wade Vision, and I can also be found on emotionally14.com, which is a website with an associated Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, 2 podcasts. Everyone's a winner. Get on board.
Excellent.
He's got the lot.
You can find everything I do at talkstarwars.co.uk, and I'm at talkstarwars on Twitter. Don't forget to check out the rest of the Commonwealth at starwarscommonwealth.com. You'll find excellent Star Wars podcasts over there, from Tumbling Saber, Generation
really
X-Wing, Rogue Squadron podcast, and the Skyhoppers. All the links to those can be found in our show notes, so download those. Don't forget to check us out on Wednesday when part two of this monster episode of pre-Rogue One comes out. We will see you guys then.
May the force be with you.
Bye-bye now.
Take care.
It's a wrap. It's a wrap.